Hello and welcome everyone to a just ungodly special episode of MTG Potpourri. I don't even know what an episode number it is anymore. That's how damn special it is today. But joining me to bring you this amazing extra duper duper special episode is both Conley Woods and Adam Staborski. Say hello, fellas.
Hello.
Hello, fellas.
I'm a little bit under the weather, so I apologize for this podcast.
What kind of weather are you under? Snow? Sleet?
Not yet. It has not snowed yet.
Yeah, are you getting kind of terrified? We're getting into sort of the getting close to winter season where weird stuff can happen.
What do you mean weird stuff can happen?
Just like random blizzards and stuff. You're in Colorado.
It's Colorado. I've lived here for 10 years. I'm not worried about that stuff.
Oh, I figured with just the curse you have with just public, any sort of public travel, I figured you would be.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not too worried about that kind of stuff.
I guess it doesn't really matter what season it is. It seems like you're going to get kind of hosed either way.
That's true. I have not missed a flight in at least 6 months, though, so do not jinx me.
Woo!
I know.
Did you switch airlines? Is this like no more Southwest? Or?
Actually, no. The whole reason I started missing flights is that I moved away from United as my primary airline because I have a hub here in Denver to just going for like cheapest fares. And then I had to experiment with a lot of poor airlines.
So you're a United man again?
No, I'm still on the randomness. I've just learned which airlines to avoid.
Oh, okay. Well, that might be something at the end of the podcast to share that. If people don't do a lot of air traveling, they might be nice to know which ones they should avoid.
Well, like, I won't get too into it, but basically there's just like, these days there's like stripped down airlines like Spirit that you have to really know what to do ahead of time. Like if you're at your first time flying Spirit, you will hate your life because you will probably be caught off guard. But if you've flown Spirit enough times and you want to pay like $80 to fly across the country with nothing more than a backpack, then you're probably good.
How can a modern airline surprise you? Like, oh, are they like taking your pants when you get on the plane? Like, what are they doing to truly surprise
you? Like Spirit like literally charges you. They literally charge you for a glass of water on the plane. You will not get anything for free on a Spirit airline. If you have any more than a very small check-in bag, you pay for it. If you want to check in your luggage in the bottom of the plane, you pay for it. If you want any food, snacks, you pay for it. If you want like a pillow or a blanket, you pay for it. They have like little things. Like basically they're like the most stripped down airline you could imagine. And then everything is extra.
Wow.
If you want a bare bones flying experience with like a small seat and stuff, you can do that. You pay like $30 extra, upgrade to a big seat. They have like infinite ways you can spend extra money.
So do they have a first class?
A lot of it you don't know about it. Do they have a what?
They have a first class then? Like, what's a stripped down first
no,
class?
No, that's just their big seats, which are literally just like 2 inches wider, and you get like 2 inches extra leg room, and you pay $30 extra to sit in them, and there's like 10 of them on the plane or whatever.
All right. My interest is peaked.
But there are other airlines like that these days. Like, Frontier is slowly morphing into that. Southwest has always kind of done its own thing, but one thing about Southwest when you're doing searches online is that you have to go to the Southwest website specifically because they don't advertise through Expedia or anything like that. So there's just like some tips and tricks that you kind of get used to when you've been traveling enough.
Yeah, because depending on how you're traveling, is if you're like traveling by yourself, that would potentially not be a terrible thing. Traveling with kids, that sounds like a living hell, but that's just air travel in general with young children.
Yeah, I've only taken my kids on like, three or four trips, so.
Oh, God, Conley, just wait till you try to air travel with like an infant. It is, it's humbling. But the only
I won't do it because by the time I have kids, we're going to have teleportation systems, so it'll be fine.
Well, I mean, according to the news today, in 20 years, we're going to have a clean, burning fusion engines in 20 years. The energy crisis will be over.
There you go. That's when my kids are going to be born.
All right, guys. So you'd be that
zero magic talk.
That 55-year-old guy like, oh, God, I made a – yeah, she's 20, but I made a horrible mistake because I'm a 55-year-old man with a 2-year-old.
Hey, whatever works.
So it's a little delayed, but I've been it got like derailed on, Spirit Airline flying, whatever. So this is
episode 19. Talk about that.
Adam, I'm going to charge you $1 every time you try to do either a segue or interrupt me. This is our new no frills Spirit Airline-esque podcast.
no frills. I get to do what I want and pay for it. That's a luxury. I love it. I'll buy that all day long. So this is actually episode 19, and so I can understand why you might have lost track. So everyone is home. You know, the human body typically has 20 digits. You know, four fingers on each hand, one thumb, and then your five toes on each foot. So that's 20 total digits.
So you don't count a thumb.
We're hitting the upper limit of where Tom can count. So once we pass 20, he's going to get really, really confused.
That's true.
I've been waiting to say that for like five
minutes.
Above
21, depends on what you're wearing that day.
Hey, sorry, has anything happened that magic related ever?
No, nothing at all. There's been no tournaments. Ever. Nothing. Nothing, actually.
Yeah. All right. I guess that's the end of the podcast. Thanks everyone for tuning in. It's been episode 19.
Yeah, this is a stripped down podcast. We took out everything, including the magic talk.
Well, hold on. Let's do some detective work here, Tom. So Conley, you were flying recently. Where were you flying back from?
Phoenix.
Well, you don't live in Phoenix, so where were you before that?
Well, I was a lot of places before that. When I was like 12, I went to Paris. There was once where I drove up to Nebraska, but I'll never do that again. And there was this other time where I had to go through Iowa on the way to Chicago. Yeah, a lot of places.
God, you're pulling a Tom tonight.
That was dirty.
I was in Hawaii prior to Phoenix, Adam.
And what was in Hawaii?
There's like trees, palm trees, sand. You got people on the beach. There's like sharks. Oh, and there was a pro tour too.
Nerds.
No, there was a pro tour in Hawaii that I did not do well at, unfortunately.
Yeah, so for those of you who may have missed the coverage, you know, Ari Lax won. He did a thing.
My teammate. So we technically did win. Our team won the tournament, but I personally did not do well. But it's always nice to have a teammate do well in the tournament. So, props to Ari, of course.
Yeah, he's had a couple of close calls over the years. So
yeah, no, I just I'll let you
good
keep
to,
going.
Good to see that.
But for me, as being a casual kind of observer of the news coverage coming out of the Pro Tour, was it really true that people were, I don't say people, big quotes, those people that seemed to be mad or angry at him because he seemed to be actually happy and excited when he won?
If you phrase it like that, it obviously seems completely terrible, and a lot of people did phrase it like that. But basically, Ari has a very abrasive personality. Specifically, when he's playing, he does this in testing. He does this all the time. I've personally have gotten upset at Ari before while playing him because his mannerisms are certainly not the most considerate in the world. They're not necessarily intended to like be rude or anything like that. But he basically just like does whatever he is feeling like doing, and then people tend to take that a bad way. So like in the coverage when his opponent was dead on board or whatever, because he had a Zergo Helm Smasher in his hand, he like tours up his planes and then like stares at his opponent for a second, who's Yuya Watanabe, and then taps his mana and slams Zergo into play tapped like on the middle of the red zone to basically signify you're dead. And people are like, you know, that's uncalled for, and you know, that's the type of thing that I personally would never do, but it's also not, you know, the most offensive thing in the world. It's not like he spit in his opponent's face or like did
anything. I'd call that kind of like a windmill slamming. That's kind of a dick move.
Little bit of a dick move, yes, but he didn't. The thing about Ari is he's never doing it to like tilt his opponent. He's just doing it because he's just like, that's the way he is. He's kind of like an over the top. If you've ever heard Ari laugh, like you realize exactly what I'm talking about. The guy just does not pay attention to other people and they're thinking about him. Like his laugh is the loudest, most obnoxious thing you will ever hear in your entire life.
You're describing a sociopath. You understand that, right? The somebody that has no ability to like sense.
No, it's just he's just like loud. He's not a sociopath though. The thing is, like when he's interacting with you on like a daily basis outside of the game, he's like totally fine. He's professional. He's been with his girl for 9 years. Like he's got a pretty well established life for, you know, a 24-year-old kid. But when he is playing, he just tends to be a little theatrical unintentionally, and people don't necessarily like that. So like, you know, he peels like an Elspeth off the top in one game, and he like, you know, he peels the card up like it's a hold card in Texas Hold'em, instead of just like revealing it, and then he like slams that into play and stuff. And it's just little things like that, or like you know, just small quirky snarky comments he makes during a match and stuff. Like I said, it's nothing he's thinking about like I'm gonna upset my opponent. But when other people are watching it, they basically cannot understand how a human being can do or say these things without meaning that. So they just instantly jump to it.
Okay, I mean,
but I think it kind of hurts Ari a little bit because it sort of crushes on his win a little bit, which is not necessarily what you want to do. You don't want like the attention from your Pro Tour win to be covered up by the fact that you're kind of a little brash when it comes to your in-game play. But at the same time, like, I understand why people are making a big deal out of it because it's something that they're not necessarily used to seeing. But it's just not really, there's not really the substance there to continue to pursue it.
Let's put a little context to this too. Like, when people are doing well, especially, you know, they're in a media spectacle, like, you're always going to have people that it just seemed to always have like an opinion about it, like for better or for worse, or whether they need to or not. Like, they react to it because it's entertainment. They're tuning in and they're expecting certain things and they react to it. A great example of like of just the type of reactions that even very well regarded players can get. So when John Finkel didn't block, you know, Brian Kibler's Wolf token at the last Pro Tour of Hawaii and then died to triple galvanic blast post combat, like, you know, there was all the armchair quarterbacking of people like, why didn't John block? Well, I would have blocked. Like, why didn't he know to block? And it's like, you know, it's like they're almost like bringing John down a peg because like he made a decision, you know, based on, you know, all the information he had, and it was a relatively sound one from his point of view. So it's like any like little things like that, people jump on and kind of escalate as well. So like it's much more, like, it seems to be much more popular to like talk about how people feel about a player rather than like, did they make a bunch of really good tactical decisions? And do I understand their play style from the perspective of the information that they had at the time? Like, turns out one's a little more nuanced and difficult to do. So it's just much more fun to run rampant with the other.
But yeah. We were as a team. So the way, real quick breakdown for anybody who doesn't understand how teams work in Magic. You have the competition itself is individual. There's no bonus points or anything like that for teammates winning, but basically teams are set up to help each other test thoroughly before a Pro Tour, so that way you can kind of guess what the environment's going to be like in terms of decks, and then also during the tournament you do things like scout other people's decks. When Ari made top 8, we tested his top 8 matchups extensively, for example, while he slept. So teams do a lot of like little things like that, and you don't necessarily know which one of your team members are going to have success. You know, we've done this for Chris Fennell in the past when he top 8ed. Wesco won a Pro Tour 2 years ago. So these are all like little things that you kind of do just to help them out. And as a team, we were kind of sitting back at our beach house watching him, his first match, because it was super early. It was like 8:50 in the morning or something. Nobody wanted to head to the site. So we were watching him from our internet in the beach house. And there was just like, you know, he made a couple of misplays in the first match, like pretty hardcore ones. Like, he boarded in a mass calcify against like basically a mono white deck effectively, which is obviously just the worst thing you could ever do. And then his courser of crew fix revealed it to everybody. And he had to like kind of take that one in like, oh, I screwed up. And then, you know, a couple, like, he didn't scry once on a land and we're all kind of flipping out at home. And that's the kind of stuff that basically on coverage just went like 100% missed. I mean, the mask house, if I didn't, cause that was made a big deal out of, cause we all joked with him, but like all the little misplays that he made were basically just ignored in favor of his, you know, theatrics. Like, for example, after game one, he kind of instinctively shook his opponent's hand because Ari does this thing where before every game, he shakes his opponent's hand and tells him good luck, which is totally fine. But basically, he won the game and then instantly shook his opponent's hand to tell them good luck for the next game, which basically just looked like him shaking his hand because he won the first game. So it was like super awkward and he was just kind of nervous and rushed it. And like little things like that are, you know, they don't really define you. That's the thing, is it's like he was in his first top 8 ever. He was under a lot of pressure. He was like obviously excited, and he was in an environment he'd never really been in before. As somebody who's made the top 8 of multiple Pro Tours, like, I could tell you that it is a very different environment, and the kind of rules associated with it, the kind of unspoken things you need to do etiquette wise, can be a little daunting. And so I don't really blame him as kind of a young kid making his first Pro Tour for kind of messing any of those things up, any of the like the givens that we as a society have for how you behave in those situations, just because, you know, it was a brand new situation to him. So I can give him a little slack. And again, congratulations on the win, Ari. And that's all I gotta say.
Yeah, for me, it's just, I guess now that Magic is obviously becoming a much bigger game, or, I mean, do you feel the Pro Tour, these are going to become more widely broadcast? Do you want like a pro level Magic, say, experience, like a pro tour, do you want that to be viewed like a like golf or like pro wrestling? I mean, do you want it to be kind of subdued and things like that, or do you want, you know, brash windmill slamming of cards and things like that, like you said, the theatrics? Is that, do you think that's a potentially a positive as this becomes more of a white stream?
I definitely think it can be a positive. I don't think people should necessarily become that character that you're talking about, but if they already are that character and that's just the way they play and they don't do anything malicious or were specifically like intended to hurt another individual, like, you know, obviously Mike Long is one of the most polarized figures in Magic history. And, you know, for better or worse, if you ask even a somewhat casual player to name some pros they've heard of, like they're going to name John Finkel, they're going to name Kai, and they might name Mike Long, who is somebody who, you know, is basically known in the game for having cheated and being kind of like the bad guy.
Yeah, the hammer. Yeah.
While, yeah, exactly. And like that bad guy status, like, I mean, people like to have somebody they don't like on the Pro Tour. There are plenty of faces to like, right? You have plenty of people who you can get behind, you know, your Reed Dukes and Hueys. And like to have people who are good at what they do, like Mike Long's not a bad example there because, you know, he did cheat. But if you're talking about a non-cheater, have people that are good at what they do, but also do it a little differently and a little out of the norm. Like, I definitely think that is appealing to a larger audience because it does stir up some hype. It creates discussion, et cetera. But at the same time, like I said, I don't think you want it to be wrestling where people are forcing themselves into these roles and or anything like that, because first and foremost, you should be playing the game. Like, the game is the most important thing. Everything else associated with it is nice. But wrestling is basically nothing but the things associated with it. There is no actual game because, you know, everything's, you know, set up at a time and pre-planned, et cetera. So the whole thing about wrestling is the storyline. I don't think you want to be that extreme because Magic has fascinating things that happen in game and kind of propel the commentary forward without needing any of that other stuff. But to kind of be a mix of both seems like it'd be best to me.
Let me pitch this to you, Conley. I think this might be a winner. So it'd be sort of golfing plus. Imagine a two-headed giant, but pro-am style, where you have a celebrity joined with a Magic pro player, and they play two-headed giant tournament.
That would definitely be fun. There are enough celebrities these days that it's definitely possible, too. Like, Ali Brosh was at the Pro Tour all weekend long. She's the one that writes Hyperbole and a Half, the blog. She was at the Pro Tour just hanging out with everybody because she has a lot of friends on the Pro Tour. But, you know, there are people who, you know, Gordon Haywood just released a little, he's a basketball player.
Oh, yes. I don't know either person you mentioned yet.
Ali Brosh. I tried to explain to Ali Brosh. You should read her stuff. She has like a blog called Hyperbole and a Half, and it's been like renowned for tackling a bunch of topics that are kind of sensitive or controversial. Like, she had a really good series on depression and the depression that she felt when she was younger. And even to this day, psychologists say that it's like one of the better verbalizations of how people feel when they're depressed. So she won a bunch of like accolades for it and whatnot. Gordon Haywood, on the other hand, is an NBA player, but he just wrote like a little, or he, I guess he made a website for himself, but he said like, I'm the best player. I'm better than LeBron. And everyone's like, what? Like, this is obviously ridiculous. But then you read it and it's not about how he's better than LeBron at basketball. It's about how he's better than LeBron at League of Legends.
Sweet.
And, but you know, people like this are all like, gaming is becoming more and more of an acceptable thing and more of a universal thing. And Magic is kind of at the forefront of that, being one of the oldest and most iconic games. So you do have a lot of celebrities coming out who would, you know, make a tournament like that quite fun, I think. Obviously you wouldn't have it too big, probably like a 16 person or 32 person tournament or something. But, that's the type of stuff that, like, if WotC is really looking forward and wants to be progressive, that they should definitely be considering all those types of things.
All right. Well, I mean, any interesting for Conley, both you and Adam, I mean, any interesting, you know, deck techs, any interesting, you know, card strategies that came out of the Pro Tour that people might want to know about if they weren't watching the coverage?
I mean, Jeskai, since he has a combo in every format you can play it in.
Yeah, the combo deck in Standard is not nearly as explosive or strong as the modern plus versions. But it does exist. We had a version in our gauntlet through most of our testing. It was actually one of the first decks we built. We called it Space Jam because it used Miletus Astronomer some other things. Like the art on Jeskai Ascendancy, if you look at it, kind of looks like the Monster Squad from Space Jam. Like,
okay, okay, anyway. You've got me now. I'm pulling it up because I saw Space Jam 4 times in the theater.
Space Jam's the nut. But we were just singing Space Jam all the time and playing it because it's like very... goldfishy deck. You don't really interact with your opponent very much. So while you're going off, you just like you would just bust out the phone and just start playing Space Jam. And but anyway, our deck was like pretty strong, I thought. We had people who wanted to be on it, but it was really weak to a couple of specific cards like Anger of the Gods, some very niche cards like Eidolon of Great Rebels, because basically the way the combo works is you look to get out some mana creatures, and then you want to tap those mana creatures for mana, then play non-creature spells that untap your mana creatures, and therefore you are generating a ton of mana over time, and at the same time digging through your deck, because Jeskai Ascendancy loots whenever you cast a non-creature spell. So eventually you find something like a Retraction Helix. You cast Retraction Helix on one of your mana creatures, and you use that to constantly bounce a cantripping something from another mana creature, then you like a Dragon Mantle, for example. And then you keep playing Dragon Mantle over and over and over again as your guys untap and you draw cards and you fill up your hand. And then eventually you find a win condition. Our win condition was just Hammer Hand. You would just play it infinite times, make your opponent's stuff not be able to block, and then you would attack with a giant hasty thing. But there are other win conditions like the Altar's Brood, or I think it's Altar's Brood. It might be Brood of the Altar or whatever. I don't know. But it's one mana artifact that went on non-creature spell or non-creature. No, it's just any permanent. Whenever a permanent comes into play, you mill your opponent for one. So you just deck your opponent with that. Other people use Burning Anger because Jeskai Ascendancy gives your creatures +1/+1. So you get your creatures up to a gigantic size. You put Burning Anger on them. You tap it, kill your opponent. So there's a lot of different ways to use the combo. But the essential, throughout all the formats, the essential parts are just basically mana creatures, Jeskai Ascendancy, and non-creature spells to untap those mana creatures.
Yeah, that sounds like exciting magic. Like it is. Goldfish. It's just it like, okay, I'm gonna go check out for a little while and look at pictures of the monsters. there is definitely a resemblance. That is a very apt analogy. I like it.
Exactly. Now you know.
That's half the battle. All right. So obviously, say congratulations to Ari. Jeskai Ascendancy is good in pretty much any game you can play it in.
It actually is not that good in Standard, for whatever it's worth. It made the top 8, but it's a very easy deck to hate on if you want to hate on it. So if you're playing it, you need to know that deck really, really well.
What would be some of the key hate for people if they're looking at Standard?
Key hate for that deck?
Yeah, I was going to say I am playing against a Jeskai Ascendancy deck. What would be some of the key hate to play?
Well, the number one thing to be able to do is to be able to Bile Blight your own Sylvan Caryatid. To kill their Sylvan Caryatid. That's the number one trick to know, because they rely heavily on their Sylvan Caryatids to win, and you can't kill Sylvan Caryatid through most means, so you Bile Blight your own, and you kill theirs. Other cards include Crackling Doom, which does kill Caryatid, but often your opponent will run some type of like small creature to save their guy, because Caryatid's a 0/3, so like a Satyr Wayfinder, for example, would save your creature from Crackling Doom. Anger of the Gods is extremely strong. Phyrexian Revoker, naming any of the mana creatures, also very strong. Eidolon of Great Rebels kills them because it can't cast that many spells. And then there's also any type of like instant speed way to remove Jeskai Ascendancy. So like Utter End is fine, although it's a little slow by itself.
Okay.
In Standard, there's also Back to Nature and Naturalize, which are probably go-to options in green. Erase is reprinted.
Soul Tie Charm is reasonable. You also have just like the Gate and things like that are pretty good against it, so...
All right, so we've beaten the Pro Tour to death. What other exciting, besides, I'm assuming pretty much every person on the planet has watched the video of the guy opening the Alpha starter and getting the Black Lotus?
Yeah, that's the Open Boosters YouTube channel. He's opened up some pretty sweet cards in the past, but clearly the Tropical Island Black Lotus pool is a strong one out of his Alpha pack or whatever.
To me, playing the game for such a long time, it looks so strange to watch somebody opening a pack wearing, you know, surgical gloves. It makes sense, but it just looks bizarre.
Do you see him with like the blade cutting the side of the packaging the whole time? I'm like, what if he just slips and cuts a card? Like, what?
Yeah, I'd be using like child safety scissors, man. You know, like something that can barely cut plastic, but you know it can't cut cardboard. See, I agree. It's like, you know, one little twitch or a sneeze and it's like, oh, you stab. And then he opens it and finds the partly slashed Black Lotus and he cries.
I actually just saw a Reddit thread. I don't have access to it now since I'm on my phone. But I saw a Reddit thread that actually said he got those things graded and they've been returned to him. So somewhere on the internet, there is documentation of the grades of those two guards. I assume they are very high, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the only thing that could happen would be if they're off center in some fashion.
Yeah, they were not off center anyway. He made sure to even note that when he pulled them, because that is a very common thing in Alpha and Beta. It's just a card just like slid to the corner or whatever and has a small border on one half.
Yes, I mean, to me, it's obviously kind of dumb, but I found it fairly entertaining to watch. It was like the N64 unboxing video, but current and something that's actually worth a boatload of money. Not as much as the Beta Black Lotus, apparently that's going for the $100,000, but still pretty damn good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a channel devoted to openings, so the guy's been doing it for a while, obviously has, you know, his gimmick and shtick, and honestly captured, you know, probably the reaction I would have. What I actually really like about the video is totally unrelated to the video itself. It's the fact that this is now the newest like Magic the Gathering thing to go viral. You know, 2 days, like 2.5 million.
Wait, it's like on CNET and everything else. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like this is the thing that like people whose last experience at seeing Magic was, you know, was basically an asshole at a tournament taking photos of people, is now going to be, oh wow, really? It's a 30,000. Really, Magic has, oh wow, like it's one of those things where it kind of displaces the negativity and replaces it with something that's, you know, pretty awe-inspiring, like, you know, like other people's hobbies, like it's the equivalent of like going into a junkyard or like going to like a private auction and like finding like a mint Shelby 69 Shelby just there, and you can just get it, you know, just as the lot that you bought sight unseen. Like that's the equivalent of it. It's just an unbelievable thing that just doesn't happen anymore.
It's kind of gambling in, you know, some fashion.
Well, it's definitely gambling. Those sealed starter decks or whatever are worth infinite. However, the commons and the basic lands are actually they do give you back some amount of the value. But if you're not pulling something decent like a dual land or whatever, you could easily lose your money.
Yeah, especially with the curse of people didn't play back in the unlimited sort of beta revised times, is there were some just unbelievably terrible rare cycles like the Laces, where you really could get this utter crap in that pack.
That was the amazing thing, is not only does he open a Black Lotus, but it's other rare, because you get two rares per starter, because he gets a Tropical Island, which is obviously like the second or third most valuable dual land. So for like basically that to be open, I mean, you're upping your prize pool there by another $1,000-$2,000 or something. I don't even know what the graded version's worth, but like he could easily just open up a Lace.
Mint Undergrounds are, you know, closing in on 5K.
So, yeah, I don't know what a,
yeah, it's more than a grand. I was gonna guess 3K,
but yeah.
I mean, what, regardless, like obviously these packs don't go up for sale after, like what would be even like a rough deal of like what would, if I wanted to buy an Alpha starter unopened, what am I looking at? If I'm willing to gamble.
I thought it was 1,100. Now. I'm going to do a quick eBay search.
1,100?
1,100 makes sense, because that would be like the dual land or bust type scenario.
Huh, interesting. So that's actually kind of fun.
And there are certainly other cards that are worth a lot that are not dual lands. Like if you just open like a Jusum Jin or whatever, that's worth quite a bit.
I'm just pulling up Alpha Booster Pack, and I'm not finding much.
Well, Alpha Starter Deck, I get one in Switzerland for like almost 3K.
Oof. So that's probably a little high, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been people that saw these just went to eBay and bought them.
Yeah, well,
like,
I can play the lottery too. Yeah,
there's not a lot.
A lot of Alpha products just floating around. There was 1,100.
Like there's just one.
Yeah, there was 1,100 total Black Lotuses made.
I'm sorry, correction. Alpha. It's an unlimited starter, not an Alpha or Beta. I mean, I'd imagine you'd have to contact, you'd probably have to look at some big dealers that. You know, there are some stores and some independent dealers that specialize in this type of stuff. Like, you'd probably have to, it's almost one of those things where like you have to know somebody to get access to them.
Huh, fascinating. I think the rarest probably pack I've ever opened personally myself would have been Arabian Nights, I guess. Even though that now in the relative tier of things is actually pretty low. I guess Antiquities would probably be better now. You could buy some packs to bust.
Yeah.
What's next on the docket?
So all this Pro Tour talk and all this Pro Tour coverage, one of the things that was teased during Pro Tour coverage and kind of was unleashed in a little bit more detail this week from Essen Spiel in Germany, the big board gaming convention, Vendorama, it's absolutely massive, is that there's going to be a Magic the Gathering strategy board game. That's the placeholder title, but it's effectively a... You know, miniatures miniatures and tile, customizable tile-driven Battlefield game using cards and flavor and effects borrowed from Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, we don't have much about it. I have the official page up from Wizards. It says, the first ever Magic board game features epic spell casting and tactical movement-based combat. I'm not sure how
else. Yeah, that's not the post you want to look at. So we have a much better one on Gathering Magic. We actually have a lot more information. It looks reminiscent of HeroScape, and that's something that was originally produced by Milton Bradley, which is also a Hasbro subsidiary. It got transferred over to Wizards of the Coast. They produced it for a few years. It was discontinued in 2010. But it kind of has like one of those cult following games. Like it was very similar if you've ever played like Wargaming and like Warhammer, where like you can have customizable pieces and you build these very ornate, intricate battlefields and you custom paint all of your armies, things like that. Very, very involved. HeroScape was kind of like kind of basically like a major shortcut. So like all of the pieces came pre-painted.
It was
all
HeroClix. It was HeroClix before HeroClix in some ways.
Yeah. Not even very. You know, HeroClix is very different mechanically.
I'm just saying
you could build whatever, these big battlefields of stuff. So one of the things in the picture is they're using HeroScape, tiles to build up like verticality to represent that on on the battlefield. And so a lot of people, the same design team that was working on HeroScape originally, was working on this board game, which makes sense because if you have people that are familiar with board gaming and the things that are involved with that, like you tap into, your institutional knowledge on that. So it doesn't, some people are calling it like a HeroScape clone. But this is also just a very early prototype. And so typically in board game prototyping, you use existing resources. So like you don't go and get a custom vertical tile made for your prototype game. You just take tiles from another game and use them until you make your own. So that's kind of a little bit of what's going on. It's not exactly clear how customizable the battlefield is. Like if each individual tile will be able to kind of build together however you want, or if they're going to kind of be these like really big chunks that you can kind of semi-randomize. A lot more information was in an interview that Board Game Geek did, and we've got that on the post as well, where basically talked a lot about how they adapted some of the mechanics from and flavor from Magic to a board game. And some of that's pretty straightforward stuff. Like if you want to counter a spell, like, doing things whenever you want on opposing players' turns is problematic in a lot of board game situations. So like in this case, it's more like an aura, like something that like people know that there's something there, but they don't know what it is until like it gets triggered, sort of like a trap instead of more like a you just react whenever you want type card. I talked about how both the planeswalker and like it comes with like minions, and so like you have to choose between do I do something, do I use one of my abilities, do I summon more allies, do I move. It's very much going to be terrain based, which seems very interesting if the battlefield is going to be highly customizable. Like you're going to be able to think about the planeswalker you want and the strategy you want to do and have an effect on how that battlefield is going to look when you go to play your opponents. Like you're going to have influence on where you fight, which kind of makes sense given Magic's flavor of teleporting interplanar mages that kind of get to choose where they want to fight.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, looking at all the pictures on the Gathering Magic article where it seems like there's these cards that are basically double length, and there's also cards that appear to be like a typical Magic card size. I was trying to figure out kind of what the how these all interact with each other. Obviously, we don't know much about the game yet, but looks like you have a small deck and then these larger.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like unit information. Like I'm looking at a big picture and it shows Liliana zombies, Liliana's Reaver, and it's a bunch of life and looks like power and toughness and how fat heart can move, how far can attack. So it looks like those bigger cards are going to represent the units, which makes sense because you want those to be visible to other players easily, and something that doesn't get mixed up with cards that are going to be in your hand. And those are probably going to be like the effects and abilities that you have access to as your planeswalker, or things that you can also choose to do. So, you know, it's one of those things where it looks like it's a mix of, you know, many board games have hand management, effects that stay, you know, that hidden information in your hand is a really cool mechanic, and so a lot of games make use of that. You know, it's great to go, okay, well, you know what my minions do, but you don't know what I can do with my minions. And so it looks like that's going to kind of be going on.
Now, have any of you guys, it just says, according to the team that's making this from Hasbro, they also worked on HeroScape, which I think a lot of players are familiar with. Have any of you played Risk Legacy? That one I am not familiar with.
Yes. Risk Legacy is... Risk Legacy is neat. It's one of those. It's one of those games where the first time you play through it, its mechanics are really awesome. Because basically, what happens is you play over multiple sessions.
Oh, is this where you actually like open things, like you permanently change the game as you play it?
Yes.
If you do. And, oh, okay. I remember hearing about this.
Players make decisions and have an effect as it goes. And so, one of the things that's kind of popped up from there, I know Gregory Marks on Channel Fireball a few years ago wrote about Cube Legacy, which was the idea that you modify cards in the cube as you go, with limitations and restrictions, and of course there's a lot of how exactly that works that makes it work that goes into it. But it's the same kind of idea, is that you know, as you play through, suddenly things change slightly, and those cards that, you know, hey, you know, I really wish this dude had haste, and you're in the ability to put it on there, suddenly it totally changes the tenor of the card, how it works, the things it interacts with. And so it seems to be that type of that's kind of what Risk Legacy is all about. It kind of changes the gameplay. Now, once you play through it once or twice and like people know what the twists and turns can be, it kind of loses some of its luster because you are playing Risk, which is a pretty straightforward game once you've played it once or twice. So I would be surprised to see that type of element. But I think in terms of having things in players' hands, whether they can dynamically change something in a dramatic way, like that's just part of the excitement of a board game. Like the ability to influence the game in a dramatic way is what makes that hidden information appealing. So I'd be shocked if there weren't ways to really upend somebody else's plans.
Hmm. Looks pretty cool as I look at this. All right. I am intrigued. Again, 2 to 5 players. It's kind of as you get sort of a big multiplayer game going, and yeah, it looks fun.
Yeah, so they're targeting a Gen Con release next year, which makes absolute perfect sense given board gaming's presence at Gen Con. So I'm really looking forward to finding out more about this as we kind of roll over to that next year.
Now, for you, Conley, does sort of these kind of products that are sort of exploring different avenues, imagine, does this kind of get you excited as you kind of, I don't know, reimagine and kind of get back into Magic again?
I like all these like side projects and stuff like that are good for the game generally because they attract newer audience to the game. So I'm always for that. In terms of like this board game, if it's a good game, I'm sure I'll play it. And if it's not a good game, I'm sure I won't play it. That's basically what it comes down to. But like anytime Magic's able to expand, whether it be a movie or a board game, anything that is not card related, I'm all for it.
It feels almost like a board game version of Magic Tactics from Sony.
Sure.
Which it was actually a ton of fun to play. It was just, I think the pay model wasn't good. So this would actually maybe be a really neat way to bring that back. So I'm all for it. I guess compared to other board games, I don't buy a ton right now. I mean, would these typically be like in that $50 to $70 range for this sort of a, I guess, sort of a product?
I would guess 40 to 50 bucks. Probably.
40 to 50. Okay.
I could see
Dominion stuff about that.
I mean, depending upon the tiles and the things that they use, you know, it looks like they're using like cardboard, like punch out cardboard for like vertical walls and kind of like terrain obstructions. If they stick with this kind of high density cardboard, you know, like almost like jigsaw puzzle pieces to kind of fit together and build the battlefield instead of, You know, HeroScape was very famous for the plastic molded pieces that kind of tiled together very nicely. If they go with more of a cardboard route, it'll add a little bit of weight to it. But I could see them aiming for, you know, like a $35 or $40 price point, like on the lower end, because this is kind of one of the opportunities for Magic's branding to get out there in a broad sense. Like imagine this on Target shelves at Christmas time. Like I could see that kind of being a vision.
Wait,
for
like destroy target shelf or regenerate target shelf.
like regenerate, like it's on Target, the store Target's shelves, like Walmart.
Oh, okay, I said Target shelves.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I got it. but that's kind of where I see this going. Like the idea of building a board game, like they already have like great, you know, penetration in terms of familiarity with the game with board gaming audience. I mean, most stores that cater to board gamers also cater to Magic. You know, that's typically a really good synergy. People, there isn't as much of an overlap as you might expect, or sometimes there is a lot more. I know I didn't really get into board gaming until really this year, and I'm still not in it in the terms of where I see people going to, you know, 4 and 5 day conventions to just play board games all day. But, you know, I know Magic players that do that, and I'm certainly one that does that. So in terms of tapping into an audience, especially trying to hit mass market audience, you know, board games are a great way to do that, because you don't have to, you're not investing into cards that don't come with their own storage. You're getting like a complete game all in one shot.
Well, exactly. That's the biggest thing, is that Magic is very much an investment, a lifestyle that you have to choose to kind of be a part of. Like, even casual fans of Magic probably think about it more than any other game they play. For example, it's just the nature of Magic. It takes up a lot of mental space. Whereas this is a 100% self-contained thing. You know, there's no daunting, you know, like if you walked up to somebody right now and told them, yeah, Magic's not that expensive, I can get you a starter deck for free and we can start testing and stuff, they'd be like, cool. And then you're like, by the way, over your first year playing, you're probably going to spend $5,000. I'm like, wait, what? I don't want to spend $5,000 on this game. But like, that's like not that unreasonable of a number to like get an investment into Magic. Whereas this, like Adam's saying, $35 to $60, somewhere in that range. And like, you have a self-contained thing that you can be invested in without having to spend additional money or additional time. And it's going to kind of like, be a little bit of an onboarding tool for people into Magic. Like, clearly the systems and whatnot are different, but when you're looking at a fake version of Twin Flame that has some text somewhat close to the actual card Twin Flame, like, it can't be that much difficult to jump over to start playing Magic from that point. So I don't know. This just seems like a pretty positive thing all around.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate we had to wait for quite a while, but yeah, it looked really exciting. And it's pretty slick on the Gathering Magic article. You can look at many pictures of the little figurines if that floats your boat, or you can watch a gameplay video. It's pretty good.
You can even, Tom, if you click on the photo, it'll actually pull up a larger version of it so you can see more detail if you want.
Oh, God, I need to see all the crevices and nooks and crannies of this plastic thing, because it's, you know, that's what gets me going.
Yeah, so kind of one of the interesting things that they're doing at Essen is they were really heavy on player feedback. So it's very much still in the prototyping phase. They're still, you know, actively playtesting it. It seems like they really want to try to make sure that they create, you know, a great player experience, because that's what makes or breaks a board game. Like, you can have a bad Magic set, right? But you have all these entrenched players, all of this carryover where, okay, there's one bad set, but the next one can be totally awesome, and it kind of just picks up, you know, a few months later right where you left off. Board games aren't like that. Like, first introductions make or break the experience. So if reviewers aren't very happy with it, if they don't like it, if playtesting is kind of awkward and people don't enjoy it, your game can tank very easily, and it just sits there. You know, it's very rare to not have to move from having a poor showing and a poor introduction and a poor play experience into kind of evolving into a game that's kind of like a mass market hit. It just doesn't happen. So it looks like they're really trying to go all out and take care of that experience up front.
Well, I mean, it can never be worse than Battlegrounds. So, I mean, you can't be last place with having kind of a side Magic product anymore. That has been taken forever. Did you guys ever play Battlegrounds for the PC?
Yes, it's terrible. I didn't play PC. I think I played it for Xbox, but it was terrible.
Oh, yeah. God, I
didn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Oh, I saved all the little Best Buy dollars off of one of the Monopoly McDonald's games, and that's how I funded buying that. I used all of them, and I felt cheated. Even though I didn't actually pay any money for it, I still felt cheated. I bet I put like 5-10 hours in that game, so I kept playing, trying to figure out. I thought there'd be like a next phase in this game that would explain just this kind of really crappy combat, and like, no, that was it. It's something to check out if you've never played it before, because it is barely magic related kind of, I'm not sure how to describe that game. You basically ran around collecting crystals and then you would kind of try to spam spells. But then you could basically had a goalie that you could kind of, yeah, it was the world's worst game.
Yeah, it was terrible.
So Adam, I think, you know, Conley, he's sitting there. He doesn't feel great. He's been holding a phone. I mean, he has cauliflower ear now. Should we wrap this up so we don't strain ourselves too much as we kind of get back in the saddle again?
Just before we wrap up, I just want to do one thing and look and see if we have any sweet mail.
There's one email, but I'm not sure what to think of it. I wasn't sure because it's not really magic related. You're welcome to look, though. But while Adam pulls up, I will give you our email address, which is mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com. And Conley, I think Adam emailed that you actually just wrote kind of a really interesting article over on Channel Fireball. I didn't know if you wanted to share a little bit about it or to direct people to go read it.
Well, I mean, they're always welcome to read my stuff. I don't need to talk too much about it. It's pretty self-contained. If you're interested in my career at all or just trying to make it to the Pro Tour, you might want to check it out. I also write for TCGPlayer.com as well, although the article Tom is speaking of is on ChannelFireball.com. It kind of just like sums up a little bit of my Pro Tour experience without getting too much into the magic side of things, but more into the personal side of things. But yeah, feel free to check it out.
Yeah,
also on Twitter, you can check me out there at Conley81.
Because it seems like readers really like the more, the less magic related, but more the, I guess, the personal side of magic or the life outside of magic part of it. People seem to really respond to those articles.
Well, yeah, it's just a thing that a lot of people don't write about, either because they don't feel comfortable with their writing skills, because it's something that you don't want to, like most magic articles about a deck or whatever, you obviously, it helps if you're a good writer, but you don't have to be the greatest writer in the world to convey thoughts about a deck or whatever and still that and have that be meaningful. Whereas to write anything that's kind of not magic related, you kind of pull that safety thing away from you. So I think a lot of people avoid it for that reason. Also, a lot of people just don't like talking about their personal life, which is totally fine. But this is, you know, obviously my personal life as it relates to magic, since they've been hand in hand for so long. And I've written plenty of kind of personal pieces over the years, just because I think that they are valuable tools to a lot of people to kind of give them some insight into the life of a quote unquote pro player. So,
yeah, you had a really good analogy at the beginning of your article here. I was trying to remember the Da Vinci Code. Thank you. That's what I was trying to.
Oh yeah,
which book you mentioned?
Yeah, just reading a book and not finishing it and then trying to finish it from that spot later on, and that never works out. Trying out multiple books, never works out.
Yeah, especially in a book like Da Vinci Code, where there's a lot of, not even history, but there's a lot of ongoing drama to the story that you kind of need to keep track of.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, where can people find you? What are you writing today?
I am writing on dailymtg.com. That is the official Magic Gathering website. So I write Command Tower every Thursday. This week that we're recording on, it's a little different. It's actually multiplayer week. So you would think I would have some crazy article about the fundamental nature of multiplayer gameplay and Commander and how you two can be the master of the multiplayer ways. Instead, I just wrote about the color red. Because we were celebrating the return of the Multiplayer Hall of Fame, which was serious fun. Anthony Longhi, one of the original writers on Daily MTG over a decade ago, started writing Serious Fun, a column that I helmed for a while. And he started the Multiplayer Hall of Fame, which is basically just a way of ranking cards' effectiveness in multiplayer numerically by ascribing values across different what could be best called as animal traits of the card. And we'll have a link in the show notes, and the article beginning of the week kind of sets it up, but basically cards have different effects. So like stuff that blows everything up and has a big huge effect immediately on the game, that's like a gorilla card, draws a lot of attention, makes a lot of noise, hits really hard. Then there's cards like the cockroach type cards that just won't go away. They're really resilient. They might not be a big effect, but it's one of those things where because they just won't go away, it can add up over time and it can kind of really get carried away as the game goes on. Plankton, which kind of feeds everybody. So there's all these animal traits. And so it kind of numerically ranked the cards, and they're all multiplayer focused. So it's all things where if you're building a commander deck or you're playing a two-headed giant or you're playing with your buddies in just a big grand melee type, everything goes, These are the type of things that, are going to matter to you and your deck building, and having kind of the best of the best kind of pulled out for you, kind of highlighted, was what Anthony did. So we kind of went back over the past 10, almost 10 years of cards, basically everything from Saviors of Kamigawa forward, out through Magic 2015 this year. We looked over, looked at the cards and ranked everything for every color, multicolor, colorless, lands, the works. So it was a really cool project to be part of. Brought a lot of writers back that had been out for a while, brought new writers that have been writing multiplayer in the community, a lot of Gathering Magic writers, incidentally, but a really good group of guys, so that was fun. I also write Gathering Magic, which is why I pulled up the article about our news post about the board game, because we had a lot of cool we had some people at Essen that I'm friends with and work with, and so they sent a bunch of great photos back for us, which was nice.
Yeah, I have never heard of this multiplayer Hall of Fame. That's what I'm looking at right now. I'm very excited for blue that number four is Abishan, the Cephalid Emperor. So that's always been a personal favorite.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, if you spent your entire Magic career playing Standard and Modern and Draft, this list of cards is often going to be really, you know, it's going to be a very different set of cards. And the nice thing is each color comes with its own article that was written, and so kind of introduces and covers some of those cards and kind of gives some context on why those cards do the things they do, and what's great about that color in multiplayer. So if you've never played multiplayer and you don't like it, that's okay. But if you've dabbled in multiplayer or you kind of felt unsure and you kind of wanted some tips and tricks, this is going to be a great place to start and just kind of get your head around some of the awesome effects that matter more in multiplayer.
Huh, very cool. I will be reading this after we're done podcasting.
Yeah, I'm also on Twitter, @_Stibbs. You can always tweet at me, yell at me for everything.
And for me, basically, you can email me at the mtgpopery@gatheringmagic.com, or, of course, the venerable hate-filled Twitter, PSG Reader. Are you guys still into social media? I'm drifting away, besides posting pictures of my kids on Facebook.
I definitely need to use it just to keep in touch with people, like, you know, obviously friends, fans, etc. Facebook has actually moved less of a social thing for me and more of like a work thing. Like our team forums are set up on Facebook, and I do a lot of email correspondence on Facebook. But I still use Twitter as very much a social type media platform.
Okay.
But I really dislike all the like lists on Facebook. Just like, you know,
all the quizzes now,
10 pages of click on this and we're going to rank the top 10 fruits by, you know, whatever. It's just like, I don't care about any of that crap. So I think Facebook drastically changes based on the friends that you have. If you have a bunch of dumb friends that just post crappy lists and fake, like my biggest pet peeve is when somebody posts a fake news article that they think's real and then they get all upset about it. And you're like, it's satire. If you had done any investigation of the site, you would have realized it's satire. Also, the topic is just completely absurd, and the fact you thought it was real makes me not want to be your friend.
I question your judgment.
That's what Facebook has become to me. Lists fake articles that people think are real, and then I use it for.
Yeah, it seems to be like I used it very little until basically sharing pictures of kids with, you know, extended family, and then it came back, and that's what has become for us.
But yeah, you still have to manage your Facebook, because otherwise your Tinder pictures are going to suck, right? Am I right?
Yeah, well, I can't even keep track of all my anonymous.
There's not a chance in the world you have Tinder, Tom. You have a wife and two kids.
I don't know what Tinder is.
A dating app that uses your Facebook photos, and you get like a very small amount of information you get to put down. And
then there were massive air quotes around dating in that.
Tinder is not a dating website. It's also on a podcast. It's mostly a hookup app, but yes, there's dating involved too.
Okay, it's called Tinder?
It's an app that basically... Well, Tom, do you remember hotornot.com?
Yes, I do.
This is the natural evolution. Basically, it's a mutual hot or not where you rate people and you say yes or no.
Either, and then
if you mutually say yes to each other, you can start chatting, and basically that's all it's for. Is do I find you physically attractive? Yes, you find me physically attractive. Yeah. Let's do something about that.
You get between like 1 and 5 or 1 and 10 photos or whatever, and then you get like a paragraph of information you get to put, and then you either like yes or no every single individual you see. The yeses are people that you wouldn't mind dating or hooking up with, and the noes are obviously people you don't. And as soon as somebody else
yeses you after you've yesed them, or vice versa. You get the ability to start chatting with that person one-on-one, which is not available otherwise. Weird. So it's literally like a look at your picture, choose yes or no, and then if you like me, that's great.
See, if I'd been single, this would not be good for me, because it'd be like me holding my cat, or
there's a lot of stereotypes involved, like men tend to hold like puppies and stuff like that because it gets them more attention. But then there's also the terribleness of the internet existing. So there's just a lot of like, you know, I'm scrolling through and oh, there's a penis.
That's yeah, I was gonna say it seems like it'd just be a sea of dick photos.
Yes, they're
funny. With very well done pubic hair trimming, you know, sculpting, man sculpting. Is there one called Grindr? Or am I?
Yeah, Grindr is the gay version of the same thing.
We watch Blue Bloods every once in a while, and there they, I thought it was made up for the show, but they talk about Grindr. There's a very popular, very, you know, sexiest man alive movie star, but he's gay. He doesn't want that to be known because he doesn't think he'd get the good role. So he meets guys through Grindr.
And yeah, one of them literally just Tinder for gay people, because for some reason that is not a thing available on Tinder. You just either choose men or female, and then you like those people, but it has nothing to do with their sexual orientation.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah, I think I would just be floundering in the current sort of dating scene. I would be confused constantly.
Even those of us that are not married with two kids are still floundering in the current dating scene.
So gosh, it's terrifying. Yeah. It seems like, yeah, unless you get to know them through like school or work or, you know, whatever community activity it is, you know, bonfires, you know, go back to the 50s.
Yeah, and now imagine you're a professional magic player that travels the world and has no time to meet women. Imagine how difficult it is then.
Yeah, I can't.
It's a pain in the ass. That's all I'm saying.
I'll help you out, Conley.
All right. Wingman for me, Tom.
I've talked with my wife about this. In my mind, I think.
Whoa! That's not what I meant by wingman. I don't know where you're going.
Hey, come on! Wait till you see what I'm offering. Just wait. But no, in my mind, I feel like I would be the world's best wingman, and my wife thinks I'd be the world's worst wingman. Because for me, I think the reasons positive why I'd be a good wingman are: A, I'm married. Isn't that just by default make you the perfect wingman?
Sort of, but you can't really go on double dates with girls at that point, which is a little awkward.
Well, then you can go on. You bring your spouse.
I mean, that's not. I guess that works, but unless your spouse is friends with the female, it's gonna be awkward for the lone female who doesn't know the other three individuals there on the date with her.
Well, I mean, I'm typically, if I'm playing the wingman, I'm not gonna know the person that you're bringing on the date. I guess you would maybe know my spouse at that point, but being a professional magic player, she probably wouldn't trust you anyway. So, I mean, there wouldn't be a lot of, you know, knowledge beforehand. So, okay, so apparently being married, not a great wingman feature.
No, I think it's fine. I don't know. We'll let people, viewers, feel free to let us know.
This is what I want emails, but nothing magic related.
Would be in the wingman world.
That's all garbage under the, you know, bridge. I want to know what makes a good wingman or wing person. I am not being.
Sure, I'm sure there are articles out there for you, Tom.
I don't need to read. I want to hear from my listeners.
This road we are choosing to adventure down is a road filled with potholes and terror. I am not very comfortable with the idea that we should be pulling from pseudo and totally anonymous listening audience what makes a good wingman. That just sounds like we're asking.
Look, our listeners are sophisticated people, Adam.
Yeah,
they understand that trolling is not acceptable.
But they're listeners that like Tom's crazy B-movie stuff, so they're insane.
Yeah, right. Human centipede does not make a good wingman, because that's just disgusting and gross.
Agreed. I would agree with that.
I mean, do you want your wingman to be like the cool suave guy, or do you want them to be sort of the
well, it depends. It's all about the attitude. If it's a cool suave guy, but he steals all the ladies, that doesn't really work.
But this is married, so they're not looking for any action. They're just there because they're like, hey, I got a babysitter, and I'm gonna go drink.
You're
I'm sure
alcoholic.
That line alone will be make a great wingman.
What
Tom.
You just described,
you just walk up
to
ladies, be like, "My friend here, he has no children. I do, and they have a babysitter, and I'm here to drink."
Yeah, and they'd be like, "I feel bad for him. I'm going to go talk to his friend, because all this guy's talking about is Barney, Sophia the First, and diapers."
All right, I'm gonna side with you in the dark. I'm gonna side with your wife here and say you're the worst wingman of all time.
Damn it! I want to prove myself. I feel like I don't know why I need to prove myself as a wingman, but I feel like I need to. I think I'd be a great wingman.
It's all right, Tom. So some of these things, you know, you're just not made to be good at everything.
That's true, but you always get kind of mad when you hit your limits and what you're not good at. We all want to be better, and I want to be a better wingman.
All right, are we ever going to wrap this podcast up?
Before I'm going to let Adam wrap it up because I'm not very good at that part.
So if you want to email us about being a wingman, what you think makes good wingman, or perhaps something that's actually related to magic, you can do that at mtgpotpourri at gatheringmagic.com. You can also hit us up on... You can also hit us up on Twitter.
In MTG Potpourri, our title, MTG is only three letters. Potpourri is a lot more letters, so we should naturally be less magic than magic.
Right. Yeah. In theory, if somebody can't spell potpourri, we're already cutting them off at the email address, which is awesome.
That's true. We have a very difficult email address.
So if you're using Grindr, you can't even spell correctly because I pulled up. They don't have an E in it. So
Tom, that was one of the most heinous things I have ever heard.
What did I do?
You just said if you use Grindr, you know,
you can't spell.
You said no homosexual people can't spell. That is literally what you just said. I don't think you meant that. I think you meant Tinder.
No, he meant Grindr because there's no E.
Grindr doesn't have an E in it. I don't care if it's animals, whatever, same. It doesn't matter. I don't like modern day apps where they have to spell things oddly. Like leaving out.
It's all the good names are gone. And they have to make it through the trademark office.
It's true.
But Grindr. That's just a gross name anyway.
How about this? While we wait for the next podcast to come out, you work on an MTG version of the Tinder/Grindr app.
Ooh. Where you could maybe, instead of by pictures, you could have like your deck lists and stuff. Like yes, I'm a red mage.
Exactly.
I'm that's a blue exactly mage.
I like females it. Are attracted to you via your deck lists.
Yeah. Who's got the best deck list? It'd just be so many pictures of decks. Oh, God.
I can hear the net decking accusations from here.
All I could hear is the money falling from the sky.
God, yeah, because who like you just said, Conley, you would love, like you said, hey, I need, you know, I'm busy, you know, I'm really into all this stuff. I'm into magic. I'm a professional game developer. I want to meet other people that are into the things that I like. Boom.
So I think I have a closing here. If you are an entrepreneur or you are helping a startup company with three people that don't know how a startup works, you can hit us up on Twitter and let us know that you are interested in making Tom and Conley's dream of the Tinder for Magic a thing.
Yeah, what are we going to call it? It clearly has to have an R in it.
No,
it
I mean
Tinker. Tinker, that's it.
Tinker.
No E.
Decker.
No,
that sounds like I'm physically
I think there's something to be said with following like a mechanic, like cycling.
Oh, Wooburg. Let's call it Wooburg.
Wooburg. Okay, I can get on board with Wooburg. If you want to help us make Wooburg a thing, hit us up on Twitter. That's at MTGPotpourri on Twitter.
Oh, God, yeah. I can retire now. Good. Yeah, just all that Wooburg cash coming in. Oh, man. All right, guys.
We got to wrap this up.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go grab my bowl of cereal.
We what?
I always have a bowl of cereal after the podcast.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, just not. If I have a bowl of cereal.
To know, it's like 10 p.m. in case anyone's wondering, and Tom's having bowls of cereal.
Yeah, and if you really want to know, it's Corn Chex.
That's not even an exciting cereal to have after a podcast. Like, where's the like Fruity Pebbles at, bro?
Conley, I feel like you haven't listened to the last half. I think we established I'm not an exciting person in most ways right now. So it feels like Corn Chex would be the perfect cereal for me.
Corn Chex, not a great wingman cereal, is all I'm saying.
Oh, my God. I'm on the website that's apparently all just about Tinder pickup lines, and some of these are just atrocious.
And we've hit the limit. So thanks for tuning in this week. After Tom finishes his cornflake whatever,
we'll be back. Okay, I'm going to share one with you. They put the pickup lines as you're having a text message conversation. So this one just says, sit on my face, ? The response is, does that line usually work for you? And the response is, only with girls who want to sit on my face. So that's pretty good.
All right. And that's the end of the podcast. Goodbye, everybody.
Like it.
Thanks, everyone.
Hasta.
Oh, these are great.
Oh, man. I can never tell if the casts are awesomer or like worstest when you go off the rails, Conley. It's the best, but I always have trouble reading.
Fair.
You got me so good.
I'll throw that one out there. I'll have people start working on it now. And Adam, should I just get it edited up kind of this weekend and to you guys by like Saturday, Sunday? Is that cool like usual?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, none of this is like super duper time pressing. So
Not at all.
I can look at the schedule and, you know, especially if we're going to leave Sunday night as like a viable option and like down the road, like we could just always aim to have a cast up on Tuesdays.
Okay. Yeah, as I say, Friday and
Sunday. Monday or Tuesday is always a good day to post something.
Yes, yes, so yeah, because Friday and Sundays probably tend to work the best overall. It looks like my hospital call stuff should quiet down a little bit until Ebola destroys the world. But until then, it should be pretty cool.
I mean, Ebola is asymptomatic in animals. I mean, what are you worried about?
Well, they're just the carriers. So that means they can be asymptomatic and I can still get it from them. That's the terrifying part.
Yes, yes. Okay. That makes much more sense.
And they still don't really – they don't have a great idea what the actual animal reservoir is, which is pretty bizarre for something that's we've known about as long as Ebola. They initially thought it was basically monkeys, but now they feel that that's not it. They think it's like little mammals. They thought it was bats for a while. We just don't know. The only thing that was good if it was monkeys, that's hard for it to have an animal reservoir in the U.S. If it's like small rodent mammals, that is a little more scary.
Hooray!
Yeah. So there you go. That'll let you sleep good tonight. All right, Conley, hang in there. Obviously, if you ever want to talk about non-magic stuff, I'm here because I need adult interaction. Not the Grindr, Tinder type of adult interaction, just talking.
It's fair.
All right, guys. I will hang this up because otherwise I will never stop talking.
This was good, guys. It felt good to talk to you both again.
Sounds good. I will talk to you guys.
Adam with the creepy sign off. Good night, everybody.
You look great through your window. Oh, damn it. I just hit my leg on the garbage can. Okay, we'll talk to you guys later.